when Yosef reveals himself to his brothers, he says the following, Ani Yosef ha'od avi chai. I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? And then the Torah says, the lo yachlu ech of lanos also, his brothers could not answer him, ki nival umipono, because they were astounded before him. The Medrash comments on this statement of Yosef the following. Oy lanu miyom hadin, oy lanu miyom atokach. They to us from the day of judgment, they to us from the day of rebuke, that if Yosef, who was the youngest of the tribes, when he rebuked his brothers and said, I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? They couldn't answer him. How much more so when God comes to rebuke each person according to what he is, we are not going to be able to stand up to God's rebuke. That's one medrash. Then there is another variation of this medrash. I'm going to mention all of them, even though pretty much till the end we're not going to explain all the differences. I just want you to hear the array of different medrashim that are very similar but different at the same time. Another medrash says the same thing, except instead of that when God will come to rebuke each person according to what he is, l'fi mashehu, it says l'fi maisa, according to his deeds. So we have the same medrash with one slight variation, that instead of God rebuking each person according to what he is, according to what he did, according to his actions. Then we have another medrash in the same Bereshis Rabbah, the same collection of Midrashim, says what seems to be the same thing twice in the name of a different source. The medrash says like this, Oy lanu miyom hadin, oy lanu miyom atochacha. They to us from the day of judgment, the day of rebuke, that if Yosef, who was only flesh and blood, his brothers couldn't stand up to his rebuke, how much more so when we are going to be rebuked by God, who is the witness and the judge and the attorney, the prosecuting attorney, and everything, how much more so would mean we not going to be able to stand up to his rebuke. Here the variation is that it's not that the Medrash says Yosef, who was the youngest of the brothers, and his brothers couldn't stand up to him, how much more so we standing up to God. Here the line of reasoning is different. Yosef was only flesh and blood compared to God, who was obviously not flesh and blood. It's another variation. And lastly, there's one last medrash that has a very big variation. Medrash says the same thing. They to us from the day of judgment, the day of rebuke, that if the brothers of Yosef couldn't stand up, if the brothers of Yosef couldn't stand up to Yosef's rebuke, how are we going to stand up when God will rebuke us with pisha shel Torah for our carelessness, dereliction of Torah, the elbon hamitzvos, and the disgrace of the mitzvos? So here it's not just according to what a person is or what he did, but specifically our carelessness in Torah and our disgracing the mitzvos. So those are all the variations. Eventually we'll explain all of them. But let's start with something more basic. And that is, from all these medrashim, it seems to imply more than that, it's clear, that when Yosef said, I'm Yosef, is my father still alive, he was rebuking his brothers. The obvious question is, where's the rebuke? All he said is, I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? He made a statement, asked the question, where's the rebuke? He didn't rebuke them, he didn't start berating them for what they did to him. He just said a fact. Where's the rebuke? So there are many answers to this. I'm going to quote you three answers that other people say, and then two answers that I've said in the past, and then a new one for this year. And only the last one will deal with all the differences in the various midrash. The first ones pretty much just deal with the general question, where is the rebuke here? The most famous answer, explanation of this midrash, is the Beis Halev. Rav Yosef, Dov, Halevi, Salveitchik, Zatzal, Beis Halevi, the original beginner of the Salveitchik, Brisker dynasty. He said the following. He asks another question with which he uses to answer the first question, where's the rebuke? His question is, why did Yosef have to ask his brothers if his father's still alive? They told him when they came back to Egypt with Binyamin that Yaakov was still alive. And it was pretty obvious that they were telling the truth, because if Yaakov wasn't alive, what difference would it make to Yehuda if Binyamin was taken captive and he went home? He was only afraid to go home to face his father. Obviously, his father was still alive when he left him. So why the necessity to ask again, is my father still alive? Says the Beis Halevi, that was the rebuke. The rebuke is the most condemning kind of rebuke that a person can get. It's to be shown that you are a self-contradiction. You yourself contradict yourself. Yosef turned to his brothers and he said the following. You are using our father's love for Binyamin as a means to get me to agree to let him go. When it suits you, you care about your father's feelings. But I'm Yosef. Remember me? Is my father still alive for what you did to him for me? Where was your concern for your father's feelings when it came to me? You're a self-contradiction. When it suits you, you use your father's feelings to get what you want. And when it doesn't suit you, you don't use it. You're a self-contradiction. And he says that is the kind of rebuke that is going to be the hardest to face. Example, give you two examples. After 120 years, somebody comes before the heavenly throne, and God says to him, how come you didn't give tzedakah? And the man answers, God, you knew I didn't have a lot of money. I was a poor man. I didn't have the means to give tzedakah. Now God rebuked that person and tell him, yes, but tzedakah is important, and you should have given it anyway. But that rebuke is not as strong as the following. The following rebuke is what we're going to get. God's going to say, okay, I accept that. You weren't a rich man. You didn't have a lot of money. And that's your excuse why you didn't give to God. But according to my records, on this and this date, you ate in this and this restaurant. Here was the bill. This is the tip that you gave. For a guy who didn't have any money, where's the money to eat in the restaurant? So when you want, you have money. When you don't want, you don't have money. That's the worst kind of rebuke. You're a self-contradiction. The Medrash, he brings another Medrash that brings this idea out. We've mentioned the Medrash many times with perhaps a different lesson, but he brings this Medrash in the following way. There was a man who didn't know alphabets, and he was making fun of Elion of it. So Leo said, you can make fun of me, but aren't you afraid that after 120 years, they're going to ask you, how come you didn't learn Torah? And you don't even know the alphabet. He said, no, I'm not afraid at all. I have an answer, well rehearsed, and as soon as I say it, God's going to have to say I'm right, and escort me right away into Gan Eden. So Leo said, let's hear it. What's your answer? He says, I'm stupid. I have a very low IQ. and I couldn't learn anything. So I couldn't learn Alephas. I don't have the quality, the ability. And it's not my fault. I was born stupid. It's God's fault. Elio says, interesting, tell me, what do you do for a living? So I'm a fisherman. So describe for me what you have to know to fish. He said, well, first you have to know how to make a net. And he goes through the whole process of net making. So then you have to know where to put the nets. Not everywhere in the river are fish. You have to know by the bubbles, by whatever. And then how deep to put the net in. This is interesting. For fishing, God gave you brains. And for Torah, not. And the guy realizes he's a self-contradiction. When it suits him, he has the brains. And when it doesn't suit him, he doesn't have the brains. That's the worst kind of rebuke. God's going to ask somebody, how come you didn't go to a shir? How come you didn't learn Torah? I didn't have time. I worked so hard. I was so busy in the house, so busy with my job. I didn't have time for that. God said, interesting. Tell me. According to my records, here's an hour you spent on the phone speaking Lashon Hara. Where'd you get the hour? You're such a busy person. Where'd you get that hour? And so on and so on and so on. So that is one answer. The rebuke that's hinted to in that sentence is, I'm Yosef. Remember me? Is my father still alive from what you did to him? To me? From me? And here now, you're preying on our father's poor father in order to let Binyamin go by? When it suits you, you care about your father. When it doesn't suit you, you don't care about your father. That's the base of it. Next is the Mikta of Meliyahu. The Mikta of Meliyahu explains in the following way. He just explains that the rebuke is basically in the words Ani Yosef. That in itself is a rebuke. Why? Because these brothers for the past 22 years have been living a lie. They knew they sold their brother, but they justified it. They had it all explained. This man, Yosef, is a threat to the security of the Jewish people. He's trying to do us in. He's telling stories to our father. He has these megalomaniac dreams that he wants to rule over us. And he is a danger to the future of the Jewish people and a personal danger to us. And therefore, he's a pursuer. And we have a right to kill him. But we were very, very merciful. And we didn't kill him. We just sold him as a slave. They felt 100% vindicated. Not only that, they prided themselves that they didn't do as bad as he deserved. They had mercy on him. They only sold him as a slave. And they were living this with all these excuses, with all these justifications. They just went through a period with this guy in Egypt that he could have done anything to them. And he didn't. And Yosef says, I'm Yosef. All your justifications, all of your excuses melt away in a second. And now you have to face the fact of what you really did. Because all the things that you thought I wanted to do to you, you see now it aren't true. Because if I wanted to do you in, I had the perfect chance to do it as the second in command in Egypt, and you're a bunch of spies. I had you in my clutches. And I didn't harm you, and I don't want to harm you. So now I'm Yosef. Now it becomes obvious that all the excuses, all the justifications are not true. That's the worst kind of rebuke, where you expose what a person did and strip it of any justification, of any excuse, and now they have to face the stark facts that they did something wrong. We're all like that. We all have tremendous excuses. You know what the Gemara says? There is no special Gehenna in the future. It's not a place. You know what Gehenna is going to be? Says the Gemara, God is going to take the sun and take away its protective covering. There's a tremendous bright light. And that bright light is going to be Gehenna for the wicked and Gan Eden for the righteous. How so? Because in this world, righteous people do things that are right, and they believe that it's the right thing to do, and they believe they're going to get rewarded. But there's always doubts. In the future, it's going to be so clear and so bright that what they did is right and deserves reward. That in itself is going to be a tremendous pleasure for the tzaddik to know clearly, 100%, without any doubts, that what he did was proper. On the other hand, rishayim sin, and they have all kinds of excuses, and they delude themselves into thinking what they're doing is okay. In the future, God's going to make it very clear what's right and what's wrong, what's real and what's not real, what's true and what's not true. And the Rosh is going to have to face what he did when it's stripped of any kind of excuse or justification. And that's Gehenna. Having to face what you did and not have any excuses, not have any justification. So that is the rebuke. The rebuke is, I'm Yosef. And now, in a second, 22 years of lies, of justifications, of excuses, disappeared. And they had to face the stark reality of what really they did. Nobody had to say a word. That in itself is the biggest rebuke. That's the Michta Mariyah. Then there's another opinion, another explanation, which I don't remember who says it. But I remember hearing it, and sometimes seeing it, I don't remember whose name. Very cute idea. What was the rebuke? And what is the similar kind of rebuke that God's going to give in the future? The rebuke was the following. Why didn't the brothers recognize Yosef? Why didn't right away they see it's my brother? Yet Yosef recognized them. So, first of all, Yosef was expecting it. So he was looking for people that would even remotely look like his brothers. Beyond that, many of the brothers were older than him, and they already had a beard when he was sold into slavery. So he recognized him. But Yosef was a youngster when they sold him into slavery. He hadn't yet grown a beard. So they didn't recognize him now with a beard. So Yosef tells them the following. I'm Yosef. How come you didn't recognize me? If the reason is because you didn't recognize a mature face, because you remembered me as a kid, an immature face, how old Avichai? Is my father still alive? Because we know that Yosef was a spitting image of his father. Right? He was Ben Zikunin, Rashi says, the Musta Yukno. He looked exactly at the same facial features. The same features. Thank you. I don't know if it's going to help, but it's good. He had the same exact facial features as his father. If that's the case, how could you not recognize me? Did you forget what your father looks like? You should have looked at my face and seen your father. So, is my father still alive? Maybe you forgot what the father looked like. That was Yosef's question to them. What's the rebuke? The rebuke is, how could you not recognize me unless you forgot your father? Unless you haven't been able to look your father in the eye. Because you're embarrassed. So you don't remember what the father looks like because you couldn't look him in the eye. I just added that now. That was not part of what I saw. Right? It just makes sense now what he meant. Right? Because if my father's still alive and you don't recognize me, that means for the last 22 years, you haven't been able to look our father straight in the eye. Same thing. That's what God is going to rebuke us. How could you not know who I was? You lived through life, and many times you forgot who I am. But that means that you forgot who your forefathers were. Because if you would have looked to your forefathers, you would remember who I am. Because they represented me. So it must be that you couldn't look your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents straight in the eye because you're embarrassed. Because You didn't live up to what they were. So you must have forgotten me, says God, because you didn't look to see who your parents were. So that's a third interpretation of the rebuke. I'm Yosef. How could you not recognize me? Is our father still alive? How come you didn't recognize me by knowing that I look like him? And it must be that you haven't been able to look him straight in the face. Now, those are three interpretations I've sort of seen. Now I'll tell you two others that I've said in the past. I'm not going to go into great detail with them, but just to mention them, and then I'll tell you something new that I thought of this year, and that answers not only the main question, but explains all the different variations too. In the past, I've said the following. What was Yosef's rebuke to his brothers? It wasn't, he didn't want to know if Yaakov was still alive. He knew Yaakov was alive. But the rebuke was, Ha'od Ovi Chai, and the emphasis on two of the words. Either one could be an answer to itself. We will put them together and make them one answer. Yosef said, look, I know that Yaakov is still alive, because obviously you told me he's still alive, and you've been bargaining based on your fear of going back without the Yamin and having to incur the wrath and the tsar that you're going to cause your father. So that's obvious that Yaakov's still alive. But ha'od Avichai, is he just existing, or does he still have some of that extra that a person is supposed to produce in this world? People were put in this world not just to subsist, not just to exist, but to take the wherewithal that God gave us and to add to it, to develop our potential and make something of ourselves. Not just to give God back what he gave us and just live through this world existing. You're supposed to be productive, be dynamic, add from what God gave you to make yourself somebody, to make yourself something. So, I'm Yosef. Is it possible that my father is doing more than just existing? Is the old, the extra of our father still there? Or have you killed any chance for him to be dynamic because of the charge you gave him because of selling me and him not having contact with me? So that's the first rebuke. Ha'od Avichai, is the extra of our father still alive? Or have you reduced him to just subsisting, just existing and not being dynamic? The second is the word Avi. Not Ha'od Avichem Chai, Ha'od Avichai, or not Ha'od Avinu, not our father, my father. I know that your father is still alive. The father of Reuben, Shimon, Levi. But is my father, the father of Yosef, alive? Meaning the following. Yaakov Avinu had a very diversified personality. Each of his sons represented a different aspect of his personality. That's why the Midrash says that if Yaakov predeceased all his sons, if none of his sons died in his lifetime, and during his whole life, he was able to interact with each and every one of them, then he was guaranteed a share in the world to come. I understand that in the following way. Each of the sons was a catalyst to interact with Yaakov and develop that aspect of his personality that son represented. If he would live his whole life interacting with all these sons, then he would be able to bring out every aspect of his personality to their completion, to their perfection, and that's what the world to come is, perfection. He would reach perfection. But if any of his sons predeceased him, he died before he died, then he would be, deprived of that interaction, then maybe he wouldn't reach perfection, then he had no guarantees. So Yosef said, I know that the father of Reuven, Shimon, Levi is alive. You are able to interact with him and bring out those aspects of his personality. But how old of Zichai, is my father still alive? That aspect of his personality that Yaakov needed me to interact with, have you destroyed that completely? Is that still alive? Or have you destroyed that by preventing him from having an interaction with me for 22 years? And that's the same rebuke that God's going to give each and every one of us. We're going to come back and present our neshamas before God. And he's going to say, are you giving me back just what I gave you? Or did you develop the potential that you had in your neshama and you're giving me back something extra? You're giving me back something that you produced, that you were dynamic, that you added to that neshama. And also, each and every one of you have people in this world that you're supposed to interact with and bring out the best in them. Not only bring out the best in yourself. Did you interact with those people and bring out the best in them? Were you a catalyst for other people or not? That's the review, both things, Ha'ol and Avi, my specific father and the extras. That's the same rebuke. Did you produce anything extra with the neshama I gave you? And did you act as a catalyst to bring out the best in the people that you could interact with? All of that said in the past. Now to tell you a new idea that I was thinking of this year. And again, it addresses a lot of the differences we mentioned in the beginning. Yosef, let's first discuss the differences of the Medrash a little bit. The Medrash seems to say there's two things involved. None of these other commentaries take into consideration what is Yom HaDin and what is Yom HaTochacha. There's the Day of Judgment and the Day of Rebuke. What's the difference between them? Day of Judgment, obviously God's going to judge us. That includes a rebuke. What's the rebuke aside from the judgment? I want to say it like this. The rebuke was what Yosef said, Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef. And that is like the Michta Meliol says. He laid it on the line. You know, 22 years you felt vindicated for selling me because you thought I was a threat to you. I'm Yosef. Is it true? I could have done anything to you over the last two parishes, right? Did I? I had you in my clutches. I'm really interested in hoarding over you, of destroying you. If I am, if I was, now is my chance. I'm Yosef. So what you did was wrong. You did something wrong to me. And that's the judgment. And that, if Yosef, who was the youngest, couldn't stand up to his judgment, how much more so God, who's so much greater than us, the judgment's going to be so much greater. So that's the Medrash. And when we're talking about judgment, talking about judgment, so God is going to judge us according to our deeds. That's one medrash, but the other medrash clarifies a little bit more. Not everybody is going to be judged the same way for the same deeds, because it's going to depend on your background, on your status. For instance, somebody who doesn't know too much and he desecrates the Shabbos because he doesn't know, is not going to be judged as strictly as somebody who knows better. Somebody on a higher level is going to be judged much more strictly than somebody on a lower level. So when it says, how are we going to stand up to God's judgment, there it says, when God judges us according to our deeds and according to who we are. Those go together. Because the deeds and who you are factors in what the judgment's going to be. But there's a second thing. That is the first part. Ani Yosef. That's Yom HaDin. If the brothers couldn't stand up to Yosef's judgment, and he was the youngest, calls came, we're not going to be able to stand up to God's judgment when he's so much greater than us. Then there's a second aspect. Even according to what you thought, that you were doing a mitzvah, you weren't doing anything wrong. The judgment will be that you were wrong, and you did something wrong. But even according to you, that you were doing something right, that you were saving the Jewish people, that you were getting rid of a wicked person who was out to destroy the fledgling nation and destroy you. Did you do it for the sake of heaven, or you did it for your own personal gain? That means even a mitzvah that person does, he can do with ulterior motives, or he can do it l'shem shamayim. Says in Pirkei Avos, two mishnayos. The first one is in the first parak, and the second one is in the fourth parak. The Shimon. The first one is Hillel. Hillel said, "Dishtamesh b'tarka chalav." A person who makes use of the crown of Torah will pass away. Now there are many explanations of that, but they are supplemented and complemented by a further mission. The mission says like this: Al tasei matorah liskavu bohem. Don't use the Torah as a crown to decorate yourself with. The lo kardum lachbo bohem, and not an axe to dig with. In other words, simple meaning, don't use the Torah to secure for yourself honor, personal honor, and don't use the Torah as a means to make a living. Don't use it as an axe to dig with. Okay. Why? Because if you do that, you're taking the Torah, which is something sublime, holy, eternal, and turning it into a very mundane tool. It's like taking a $100 bill, lahavdil, which has value, and using it to light your cigar. You're taking something valuable, and you're using it in an extremely wasteful way. If you take Torah, which is eternal, which is holy, and you turn it into an implement to get yourself honor, or to get yourself money, and that's the whole purpose of it, then you have chalas. You have exchanged the Torah for something very, very menial and mundane, and changed it from something spiritual and eternal into something menial and mundane. And that's a disgrace to the Torah. And therefore, a person like that will pass away, pass out of this world. Rabbeinu Yonah says, according to some versions of Rabbeinu Yonah, that the word Tava, Tav Gimel Aleph, is the same numerical value. It really means a crown. But it has the same numerical value as Dat, Das, religion. Meaning, don't make use of religion for your own personal gain. Do it because it's the right thing to do. Don't turn it into something that's a tool for your own selfish reasons. That's the rebuke that Yosef gave his brothers, meaning the following. Judgment-wise, it's obvious now you did something wrong. But even according to what you thought you were doing something right, why did you do it? Did you do it because it was the right thing to do, or you did it for your own personal gain? And here Yosef said, you think, you were wrong. You thought that selling me was vindicated, was the right thing to do. But did you do it because you honestly wanted to save the future Jewish people from a tyrant like me? Or did you do it because you were jealous of me? And the Torah testifies that deep down, the reason they did it was because of jealousy. Not because they thought they were doing the right thing, but they didn't do it because it was right. They did it because of jealousy. They did it for their own honor. And that made it wrong. You can do a mitzvah, but if the mitzvah you're doing is you're doing it for personal gain, and that's the main reason why you're doing it, even if you think that you're doing it for altruistic reasons, and you know that it's the right thing to do, then still there's a rebuke. It may not be a judgment. You're not going to be punished necessarily, right, as if you did something wrong. But there's a rebuke here. There's something not 100% right. There's something missing. That's what Yosef, the rebuke. Ha'od ofi chai. Is my father still alive? What bothered me this year was that still. Ha'od. Is he still alive? What does that mean? If he doubted what they said before, and they came back and he asked them the same question, Ha'od denu chai. Is your father still alive? And they said, yes, he's still alive. Now, this was already a few days later, okay, from the time they came back. So what should he have asked them if he was doubting that they were telling the truth? Maybe they just said he's alive, stop. They didn't want to make waves. Maybe he's not really alive. So what he should have said is he really alive? Not is he still alive. Still means from the last time you told me he's alive till now, is he still alive? How would they know? When he asked that the first time, it made sense. You were here a few months ago. You told me I have a father. He's alive. Is he still alive? Or did he die in that interim? But now they were here. They said he's alive. It's a few days later. They weren't home. They didn't call home on their cell phone. They didn't get any telegrams. There's no way they could know that between the last time that they said that Yaakov was alive, and now that Yosef's asking him, that he's still alive. The word still doesn't make any sense. Is he still alive? What I think is, that is the rebuke. What he's saying is the following. Until now, you were using Yaakov's, your feelings for your father, or Yaakov's feelings as a wedge, as a tool to get me to let Binyamin go home. You're trying to prey on my emotions using your father's plight, right, as the wedge, as the tool. Now, I'm Yosef. You don't need that anymore. Okay? I'm just as concerned about Binyamin as you are. I'm not going to harm him. It's all been just a charade. So I'm Yosef. How old are we, Chai? Is it still necessary for you that our father's alive? In other words, were you doing this really out of kibbutz av? Your entire motivation was that you respect and honor your father and you couldn't bear to see him hurt? Is that why you did it? Or you only did it because you needed your father to be alive to further what you want? You wanted Binyamin set free. But now, that's not a problem anymore. Is our father being alive still an issue? Is it still necessary for the father to be alive? Or you only use honoring the father for your own purposes? And now when it's not necessary anymore, it's irrelevant if Yaakov's alive or not. That's the question. Now you're doing something good, but were you doing it altruistically or not? And the Mela, when you did what you thought you were doing good before, getting rid of me, did you do it because that was a good thing to do? That was what was necessary for the future of the Jewish people, or you did it because you were trying to get rid of somebody that you were jealous of? And I have a feeling, I can't be sure, Yosef said, that it was jealousy that motivated you. And that's why the Medrash over here says differently. Here it says, not that Yosef was the youngest and closer came God, surely God. No. Yosef's just a human being. He doesn't know what your motivation is. He can only surmise. And if you couldn't stand up to his rebuke, how much more so God who's the witness and the prosecutor and the judge and the jury, and he knows exactly what your intention was. How are we going to stand up to God's rebuke when he rebukes us not for the sins, when he rebukes us for the mitzvahs that we did, but we did them for our own personal gain and not because they were the right thing to do? That's rebuke. It's not judgment. And there, it's significant that Yosef is just flesh and blood. He rebuked us. He didn't know for sure what your intentions were. How much more so where God knows for sure what your intentions are. The Mela, that's not so much that God's going to judge us for what we did or what we were. But he's going to judge us for two things. One is pisha shel Torah, the carelessness, the dereliction of not doing what's right. That's the judgment. But the second half is elbon hamitzvah, the disgrace, the embarrassment of the mitzvah. When you did a mitzvah, but you turned it into a tool just to service your own honor or your own benefit, then you've disgraced the mitzvah. Again, it's like taking that $100 bill and turning it into a match. It's a disgrace. It's an embarrassment to the value of that thing. So then, God's not going to just judge us on our carelessness and dereliction in doing what's right or wrong. But even when we did what's right, did we do it in such a way that we embarrassed those right things and insulted them because we turned them into things that we did for our own pleasure, our own honor, our own physical, material benefit, and not because they were eternal, holy things to do? That was the Yom HaDin, the Day of Judgment. That's for the fact that they did something wrong. And even according to your thinking that you did something right, did you do it because it was right, or you did it because you were jealous? That's the rebuke. And that even applies to mitzvahs, not only to things that we do wrong, even the things we do right. Any questions on that? If not, we'll go to something for next week's center. Something to think about. Next week's center, at the end of the center, it says that when they buried Yaakov, the brothers were concerned that Yosef's now going to take revenge on them. And he's going to pay them back for all the bad they did to him. And they go and they fall before him and they say, "We'll be your slaves, right? Please have mercy on us." And Yosef says, "I don't mean you any bad. You meant it for bad, God meant it for good. Don't worry, I'm going to take care of you. I have no intention of taking any revenge." So the rabbis are bothered. Up until now, Yosef's been very nice to them. Didn't take any revenge on them. But why did they suspect that he wanted to? Why didn't they give him the benefit of the doubt? Why were they afraid? It's not, now that Yaakov's gone, now they're afraid. Now he's going to, until now he was holding himself back because of his father, like Esav. Esav said, "I'll get even with you when our father's no longer around." So they thought that Yosef was going to act like Esav. He was just biding his time till the father died. So the rabbis say no. They had reason to think that Yosef was now going to take revenge, because they noticed two things that happened different than were before. The first thing they say is that Yosef stopped eating with them. Till now, Yosef ate together with the family every day. And all of a sudden, he stopped. Sounds as after Yaakov died. When he came back from the funeral, Yosef didn't appear anymore at the family meals. So he said, "You see, now he has it in for us. He's not eating with us, he hates us, and he should take revenge." The second thing they saw was something that happened on the way back from the funeral. When they returned from Yaakov's funeral, they passed the place where they sold Yosef as a slave, and Yosef said, "Hold on, I've got to go make a bracha. Because when a miracle happens to you in a place, whenever you pass by that place and you've been away for more than 30 days, you have to make a bracha, Sha'asa Linesh Bamakamasa. God did a miracle for me in this place. She said, I haven't been here in 30 days. I'd like to make the bracha. She went over to the pit that they threw him in, and he made the bracha, Sha'asa Linesh Bamakamasa. The brother said, he remembers what we did, he's going to take revenge. Now, I understand a little bit, if Yosef didn't show up at the meals, that they could think he hated it. But because he remembered that his life was in danger, and he was saved, what did they think? He forgot the whole thing? He remembered. Well, why did they assume he's going to take revenge? He remembered. What, they think he's going to forget the whole episode? Just wiped it out of his mind? Of course not. So why, just because he made a bracha, Sha'asa Linesh, did they think he's going to take revenge? So I think perhaps the idea is the following. Yosef, to a certain degree, did take revenge on his brothers, but not personal revenge. He did it to give them the opportunity of doing tshuva. Tshuva is, and it takes a lot of things into consideration. Tshuva is what's called tshuvas hamishka. If you, let's say, ate a ham sandwich and enjoyed it, then part of the tshuva is to fast so you balance out the enjoyment you got. Now you have the opposite, balances it out. Therefore, if the brothers sold him as a slave, okay, Yosef wanted to put them in a situation where they would feel what it's like to be enslaved. And that's what happened in the end. He set up this whole charade, and in the end, right, they were willing to make themselves slaves, or at least the Yavan was going to be a slave, and they were going to take his place. Or Yehuda was going to take his place. So they felt what he felt. Okay? They threw them into a prison. They felt what it was like to be in this bore, in this pit, and he put them in a situation where they felt they were now vulnerable to being sold as slaves. So that compensated for the sin that they did. There's only one problem. They didn't only want to sell him as a slave. Originally, they wanted to kill him. And for that, they got no repentance. They didn't get anything to compensate for that. So what did they figure till now? Yosef never really took us seriously, and the truth is we never really meant it. We never would have killed him. Oh, we spoke, we're talking big. But that wasn't really real. That was just talk. And Yosef understood that. That's what they thought. And therefore, he's already taken whatever revenge for our sake of giving us the opportunity to balance out our sin, we've already accomplished that. The sin was the slavery. He gave us something to compensate for that. Nothing happened that is life-threatening. That's because Yosef never really thought his life was in danger. He never really believed that we would have killed him. Now, you see, he comes back, and he makes a bracha by the pit they threw him in, that God did a miracle. There's a halacha. What kind of miracles do you make a bracha? Only a miracle where there was a danger to life, where a person's life was in danger, and then he was saved. For that kind of miracle, you make a bracha. For anything less than that, you don't. So now the brother said, oh, that means that if Yosef made the bracha, that he assumed that Ritaka would have killed him, and his life was in danger. Because if he didn't think we would have killed him, and if he never thought his life was in danger, he's not allowed to make that bracha. Must be that he did think that we would kill him. So then he hasn't yet compensated for our sin. He's only compensated for the slavery part, not the part that we put him into a fear of death. So therefore they said, now Yosef is going to hate us for putting him into a fear of death, and maybe that also has to be compensated for. So they said, look, we're willing to be slaves to you, because we never really meant it. We never meant to kill you. Yosef said, don't worry, don't get all excited. I didn't make that bracha because I thought that you were going to kill me. When you threw me into that pit, there happened to be snakes and scorpions in the pit that you didn't see, but I saw them. I was there with them. And that was the danger to my life. It's not that I suspected you would have killed me. I knew you wouldn't kill me. But when you threw me into the pit, unbeknownst to you, there were snakes and scorpions. And therefore, my life was in danger. So I made the brothel. But not because I suspected that you would have killed me, but because it was a danger from the snakes and scorpions. That was the idea. And the Mela, why didn't he eat with them? So the Gemara says, he had a very good chet. As long as Yaakov was alive, so Yaakov, his father, sat at the head of the table. And Yosef sat on the side. But now that Yaakov is no longer alive, if Yosef puts Reuven or Yehuda at the head of the table, that's an insult to power. The Elamaisa is the second in command of Egypt. He can't deal lightly with his honor, not his honor. On the other hand, he sits at the head of the table, he is slighting his older brothers. So therefore he chose not to go to eat with them, not to get the problem. They say that when Rabbi Gershon became the head of the generation in the Gadol HaDor, so he moved away from his father because he didn't know what to do. If he honors his father, right, that may be a slight in the honor of Torah, since he's the greatest Torah personnel in the generation, and his father wasn't as great. So it would be slighting the Torah. On the other hand, if he didn't honor his father, he'd be slighting his father. He didn't know if his father should stand up for him or he should stand up for his father. So he moved away. Shouldn't have the problem. Same thing over here. Yosef avoided the problem. I don't know if I should sit at the head of the table or Yehuda or Reuven. When Yaakov was alive, Paro didn't mind if he put his father at the head of the table. But a brother, right? It's the honor of Egypt at stake. So Yosef stopped going to eat with his brothers for that reason. They thought he stopped because he hated them and he was going to take revenge on them. So Yosef said, you made a mistake again. You again misjudged me. I didn't make the bracha on Shasalines because I thought you were going to kill me. But you didn't know there were snakes and scorpions and they would have killed me. And secondly, I stopped eating with you not because I hate you, because I don't know how to deal with your honor and at the same time satisfy Paro's honor. So I avoided the question, ate by myself, and didn't put myself in that situation.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So why did the brothers throw him into the pit?
Why did they throw him into the pit? What do you mean, why did they throw
him? The purpose
wasn't to kill them. No, no. They put him in the pit to keep him. Originally, they were going to let him die there. But then Yehuda said, what are we going to gain by killing him? So they said right away, okay, fine, let's do something else.
But so, if they said, what will we gain by killing him, this means that the original purpose was to kill him.
No, the original, what they said, yes. But Yosef and the brothers also know that had come, pushed to shove, they would have taken him out. They wouldn't have let him there die. They said they threw him in. But they never would have killed him. Just like in the beginning, they wanted to stick dogs on him and kill him like that. Or mamas kill him with their hands. And they didn't. Then they said, okay, let's just throw him and let him die. And Yosef and the brothers know that if they didn't have another option, they would have taken him out of the war. They would never have left him there to die. They said they would. They threw him in. But they wouldn't have let it come to the conclusion.
And another question is, Yaakov was punished 22 years that he was away from his father.
Yaakov.
And for that he got that Yosef was away from him 22 years. Which means that I don't understand how that Rav that you spoke about could move away from his father just to avoid whether or not he really should sit at the table. He's avoiding the mitzvah kibbutz.
So I would imagine, okay, I don't know, that he, first of all, squared away with his father, and he accomplished that mitzvah of Kibbutz Av in sending him letters, coming to visit him, but not being there constantly, well, this will be a problem. So he's Mekayim Kibud Av in a host of other ways, which Yosef couldn't do because Yaakov lost all contact. He didn't lose contact with his father. He just lost the daily contact of who's going to have to stand up for hope. But otherwise, he was Mekayim. Sometimes children who are farther away are Mekayim their parents a lot more than the ones with his father. It's possible too.
Why didn't
Joseph
get in touch with his father?
So that Rambam says, either because he wanted the dreams, which were pathetic to be, or he was afraid that if he would tell his fathers he's alive, without being able to control his brothers, the brothers would get wind that Yosef's alive, and he's going to tell the father what they did, and the father's going to excommunicate them, right, disown them, and they'd run away out of fear and what's it called, embarrassment, and Yosef would destroy the whole family. So he didn't want his father to know that he was alive until he could control the situation and make sure that the brothers would realize he means them no harm and the family would remain intact.
Well,